Alright, so with that kind of broad overview of niche, the next three presentations are going to delve a little bit more into assessments and descriptions of where horticulture can fit into the current research that is ongoing. So the first topic that we're going to discuss is kind of the human nature interaction area of research. And so I'm Natalie Baumgartner. I'm an extension specialist and assistant professor at the University of Tennessee, where I work with broad aspects of residential and consumer horticulture. So we are going to jump right in to this topic. Yes, we are. Because right now we just experienced, I think it may have been a, a psychologically confusing moment. Because the intent was to be able to look at a picture of nature, but every time a speaker quits talking, then there's a moment of psychological tension in the room. So it wasn't a perfect example. But the idea being that anytime we as humans move into a space where the distractions around us cease, when we're not waiting for someone standing in the front of the room to actually say something, oftentimes the way that we interact and our physiological, our cognitive, sometimes even our social interactions can change. And so with words, I am going to talk about a few of the interactions that humans make with environments like this, but also ones that are less wilderness, right, that are more human-derived nature. And so as kind of the opening discussion, we know that there's a large existing base of research on this interaction between humans and nature. And as we think about where we stand in the present in terms of urbanization, and as we look over the next few decades, we know that this interface between humans and nature, or our proximate nature, is going to continue to create challenges but also opportunities as we research that connectivity. And we will admit slight bias, but we know that horticulture provides crucial expertise and connectivity as we step into that future of research in the urban area. So there are lots of different areas that nature and human interaction research has taken place. There's some specific bodies of research that researchers that are very, very active in this area. And there are also some gaps and challenges, and we're just kind of hit on those. One of the most interesting, I think, kind of places to begin as we talk about the discussion of humans and nature is how exactly nature interactions take place. And so when we think about this, it's a very crucial element of conducting nature research, which sometimes is present in current work and sometimes may be a little bit lacking or gray, right? Because we can connect indirectly, right? You can think about the research topics of patients in hospitals or employees in workplaces, right? We can interact with nature indirectly. So there's the visual aspect where we're not physically present. There's incidental, right? When we think about cycling, when we think about all the exercise elements, even transportation, right? When we're walking through an element of nature. And then there is intention, right? Whether it be through spending a week hiking the Appalachian Trail or whether it be entering a park for an afternoon, we, as humans, make the decision to interact with nature. And so intent is important when we think about doing human nature interaction research. And, of course, there's a whole scale between wilderness to indoors. And there are also lots of validated tools when we think about being able to really assess how people interact with nature. So I'm just going to provide kind of a 40,000-foot view, so to speak, of some of the types of research that has been done in human and nature interactions. So the first area is physical, right? How it impacts our physical health. And Sherry's going to talk a little bit more directly about that. But it can reduce blood pressure. It can reduce cortisol levels, right? Physiological responses to stress, headaches. And there are some direct experimental studies that have been done. So a good example is reading versus gardening, right? Gardening, the active interaction with nature and with plants, can actually reduce cortisol levels more than just reading, right? A very focused and passive stress-reducing activity, not quite as good in some ways as gardening. So, of course, the potential to reduce illness, cardiovascular disease, respiratory diseases. And so there's been lots of work that has gone on into how to describe these green space and how that interacts with gender, with age, right, with children, with elderly, with those who interact with green space differently than some people more active in the middle of their lives, and the whole aspect of green exercise, which there's actually been a lot of work done on, right? It's teasing out some of those differences between, is it due to green space? Is it due to the exercise component? We also have this aspect of cognitive, and this may actually be in some ways the area that we've heard the most about. When we think about the Kaplan's and the work that took place in Michigan State, attention restoration theory has been kind of some of the most, especially for us here in the United States, some of the most heavily researched areas in this human interaction with nature. Reduce mental fatigue, the opportunity to increase performance in academics, cognitive performance. So one of the interesting examples of this type of work that's been done is a more longitudinal study of students who have moved from an area with a very low green space to a much higher green space in their surrounding environments, and they actually found the cognitive performance improved in schools. Well, that's an encouraging study, except that there are lots of interacting factors in these types of green space work. When we think about the fact that, especially for us here in the United States and in many Western countries, green space can be associated with income and affluence in those areas. So when students move from an area with low green index to a much higher green index, there may have been many other factors of their environment that also changed. And so it's an example of encouraging research, but also areas in the work that there may be some alternative explanations. And we also hear a lot about, and there has been a lot of work done in the psychological or the stress reduction areas. So when we think about anger, frustration, anxiety, mood, and of course the description of the way that nature can benefit us by interactions is it helps us to maintain the adaptive resources needed to meet the demands of life, right? So it has to do a lot with the focus that is involved in carrying out tasks in environments that have constant levels of distraction, which are absent in nature. And so that's a lot of the heart of the restorative elements of nature. So increases in mood, increases in self-esteem when exercise took place in nature. And once again, this is an example of encouraging research, but also some complexities. Was it actually an increase in self-esteem because of the fact that research took exercise took place, or was it have to do with the natural place for that exercise? So there's a lot of ways that there are variables that are unaccounted for in some of the nature work that has been done. Much of it has also been focused on short-term restoration because that's the best way for experimental research to take place. We have a group of students. We send them into a natural area on campus, and then we bring them back out, and we estimate how quickly and how accurately they can count numbers backwards, right? So those are a lot of the work that has been done in some of these areas. So those are kind of the elements that have been a little bit more frequently researched. When we think about the social aspect, there are lots of ways that humans interacting with nature, with plants, can have very positive effects from empowerment to much-discussed opportunity to reduce crime and violence. Bringing people together in natural spaces can improve social cohesion and support. A very unresearched area is the spiritual element that human interaction with nature can have. But overall, when we think about the physical aspects, psychological aspects, there's been less work done in the social area. Of course, it's very challenging to do experimental research in these areas. But overall, it does suggest that there's a generally positive relationship interactions with nature and social cohesion and those benefits. So that's kind of a broad view of some of the current work that has been done. And as we stand here looking towards the future, we know that this is going to be an increasingly important area of research because right now, in 2008, I believe we crossed 50% of the population living in urban areas. We're looking over the next couple of decades at being 70% of our populations. And so we know that when it comes to these topics of public health, green space and nature and how we design our cities and how we, you know, support the reduced mortality of our populations, understanding this connection, not just at a broad view, but a mechanistic view, is going to be important. Right now, a lot of the work has been led by public health practitioners. And so many of the studies and the names that I cited in the slides, probably on mine and probably on Sherry's that you're going to see more of in just a little bit, are public health researchers. And there's been a very strong European connection, especially the Netherlands, Denmark, Sweden. But when we think about our interaction with nature as an environment that looks more like this, which is actually the town that I live in, there are lots of ways that this work is currently taking place, and a lot of it, especially at the public health scale, has to do with looking at large sets of population data. And so those are the types of green space research that we commonly see done. We have this type of data, and rather than often being experimental, it's actually longitudinal. We can look at large population sets over time and see how their health, you know, trends increase or decrease in relation to their proximity with nature. But there are currently lots of discussions about the thresholds for actual significant effect, whether you're talking about medical professionals, public health professionals, other social scientists. And as I've also kind of mentioned in lots of the different studies that we've already talked about, the relative effect of this nature is often interactive with education, income, other behavior, exercise. And so there are lots of ways that this research can continue to be enhanced and give us an even better sense of the way to adapt our environments for optimum health. Work needs to be done in understanding whether it's proximity to nature, access to nature, even the biological, biodiversity and ecological features of that nature are very much lacking, right? A social scientist will say, are you in green space or are you not in green space? And biologists and horticulturalists will see lots more nuance in areas that are described as green space. We also see a lot of geographical bias, right? For most of us in this room and for much of the European researchers that I have already discussed, we make the universal assumption that going outside and experiencing nature is positive, because we live in areas that don't have a lot of snakes, right? That don't have a lot of, many mosquito-borne diseases. And so there's a geographical bias in a lot of the ways that we talk about green space. I already mentioned a lot of the alternative explanations, and that leads to the simple question that we need to really be able to strongly say that nature is not just correlationally, but causally related to the benefits that we see with interacting with nature. And this is just kind of a little bit of a preview of some of the discussion that Sherry's going to present for you. But this is, of course, from a European study that was looking at the possible benefits of proximity with green space. And what they found was that, 1 kilometer or less, 1 to 3 kilometers, it was hard to pull out the differences in proximity to green space. And what they generally saw was that it appeared that the benefit to humans was in the total green space around them rather than in proximity. But kind of buried in one of the conclusion and discussion sections was one of this really interesting statement that I want to bring out. And so what they saw was that while it didn't appear that proximity was really important in terms of one, less than 1 or 1 to 3, they found a separate and positive effect of private green areas, what we as lowly horticulturists would call gardens. However, it seems somewhat inconsistent with the presence of a small private green area, a garden, having a separate effect on health. This is it. This is my favorite sentence. Maybe the mechanisms behind both effects, that of a garden and a green space, are different, right? So So obviously, we are beginning to ask the questions about how nature, from a botanist, from a social scientist, from a public health practitioner, can be positively affected by the interaction with the horticulturist. And so I come back to this picture, and I'll continue to talk so nobody can get uncomfortable. This is actually a picture from the Great Smoky Mountains, right? So one of my favorite places to interact with nature, and you guys didn't get the full experience of it, but when I look at this picture, I take a breath and my blood pressure probably goes down, right? And when we look at the species in that picture and we think about the ways that we could potentially recreate that, that's actually French Phacelia, Phacelia fimbriata. A botanist could look at that, a landscape architect could look at that, and then think about how could we recreate this environment, right? But a horticulturist can look at that, and I can say, actually, you know, that French Phacelia is fabulous, but it really only grows in high elevation areas with a lot of, you know, the appropriate climatic conditions that we have in just a few parts of Tennessee and North Carolina. But if you were able to use Phacelia prutii, right, there could be a very closely related species that could give you a lot of these same pollinator benefits, a lot of the same visual aspects that would live in a much lighter, wet ecological area. Then we begin to be able to think about the connectivity between nature benefits and plant practitioners who can make these nature benefits available to wider audiences. So that is my overview of human nature with human interactions with nature. And I'm going to pass the baton on to our next.